It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Chimpanzees are our closest living animal relatives. We share 99% of our DNA and quite a bit of behavior, both positive and negative. My next guest is Jill Preetz. She is a primatologist and professor of anthropology at Iowa State University. For the last 16 years, she's been studying the lives of savanna chimpanzees in Senegal, much of the work funded by the National Geographic Society and the National Science Foundation. She divides her time between the field and her work in Ames, and she is back with us today. Hello, Jill.
Hi, Charity. Thanks so much for having me on.
Absolutely. And you recently were in Senegal watching your Fungoli chimps. How long were you there this time?
Oh, I was only there for a little over a month. I was there in November, which is the beginning of the dry season, and we're starting a new project with a postdoc, Nicole Herzog, who's at the University of Utah. And we're looking at the chimps' use of a burned landscape because most of their home range burns during the dry season from these bushfires that are often set by people, but they kind of just continue on and on. And, you know, we had published years ago about the chimps' reaction to fire because it was so strikingly different from sort of this popular conception of animals being afraid of fire. And they're very knowledgeable. They're much better at me than dealing with bushfires. And so we're looking at that in more detail and looking at it, how it affects their ranging and feeding behavior and good stuff like that. So there was a lot of mapping going on and a lot of chimpanzee follows as well. And there was a new baby. I'll announce that as well.
Oh, congratulations.
So, yes, thank you. Natasha had a new baby. We were waiting. It was, you know, she was overdue, I think. But yeah, she finally had a new baby, a male infant. So I was happy I got to see him too.
And have you named the male infant yet?
Yes, his name is Rafi. And so he's quite a little active guy, even though he was very young. And his older brother is Pistache. And Pistache is a very large young chimp. It's an interesting little family. Natasha's a little bit shyer than many of the other females, but it was a nice addition. We were glad to see. We needed a new infant in 2016.
Well, are there other new developments that you saw with the chimps this year? In addition to a new baby, have there been any changes that you saw in the structure of the group?
Well, one thing that we did see earlier was that the alpha male was challenged significantly, he was attacked quite brutally by a number of the other chimps, these young males. And there's one, Luther, who seems to be kind of instigating this. But David, who's the alpha male, he bounced back. He was out of commission for a couple of days, but he really bounced back quickly. And he's still, you know, hanging tight at the top. So it's interesting. It's something we always watch because there are always changes. And while I was there, actually, there seemed to be a change in hierarchy. So Luther did seem to be advancing past Bo in the hierarchy to become number three chimp. And I just got news the other day, but I didn't hear anything about that. The news that I heard was old female Nene, who is too old basically to keep up with the group, appears every few months. And so she appeared recently. And then she'll kind of, you know, stay on her own. I think probably she hangs out by water sources and doesn't move too far. But so I always get Nene reports. But other than that, things were going, you know, pretty well as far as I can tell.
Well, and you mentioned the alpha male, David. And of course, I don't know if anybody has read much about chimpanzees or looked at chimpanzee behavior. Chimpanzee politics are sometimes quite brutal and obviously very important to the group dynamic. And you just published a paper on lethal aggression among chimpanzees, the killing of a former alpha leader. What did you observe? What was that about?
Well, we had this case of a former alpha really being ostracized. And so he fell from the alpha rank some years ago. I don't see a chimp for several months. I assume they're either transferred if they're young females, or they've died if they're older individuals, or perhaps they, you know, something happened to them. And so I basically had taken Fuduko off of the roster after several months. But then, you know, almost 9 months later, my field assistant project manager at the time, Kelly Boyer, said, you know, Fuduko's back. We saw him with Mamadou, who was his close ally, and also a female. And so for a few years that would happen. We wouldn't see him for months and months and he would show back up. So to me, that was really intriguing because that is that's odd for chimps. Chimps are very social, and male chimps especially. So to not be involved in you know, the greater social group was really intriguing. And so we'd already started getting the data together and thinking about writing a paper on him. And then I was actually sick at my camp with malaria. And my field assistant came back and said that there was a dead chimp, and he thought that the males had killed him. During the night, we heard quite a ruckus, and it was very different from what we usually hear. And you can hear the chimps when they come to the ground and move away from their nesting site, and that's what we heard. And we knew something had gone on, but I assumed maybe there was a predator or something. And apparently what had happened was that Fiduco tried to approach the group at night, and there was a fight, and I'm pretty sure the younger males had the most to lose probably, and also were the ones that did attack him based on what we saw afterwards. So we reported the account of his death, but also how he lived, you know, and how he tried to get back into his group, and a little bit about the social, you know, milieu, like, you know, his allies and that sort of thing.
So he was a former alpha. How long had it been since he was an alpha?
He had been alpha over, gosh, almost a decade previously, I should say, by the time that he died. We don't know when he became alpha, but when we habituated the Fongoli chimps, we recognized him as alpha. And so it was interesting, though, because he started showing up more and more frequently only after David, the current alpha, became alpha. And David was also a strong coalitionary partner of his. Even though when Fiduco was alpha, David was young. He was a juvenile. But David's older brother, Mamadou, was a very close ally of Fiduco. So there was some changes that caused Fiduco to think he could, you know, make his move back into the group. But in my opinion, he tried to come in at a high rank, and that was his downfall ultimately.
It's interesting that he had been away, I mean, almost solitary for so long, and then tried to re-enter the group. But and of course, there's a little bit of anthropomorphizing here. I mean, the feelings of the remaining chimps were still so powerful against him after all that time.
Based on the way I can interpret his reign as alpha and the way that field assistants and project managers have talked about him, it does seem like he was a very aggressive alpha, to say the least. And the current alpha is as well. Even though he's my favorite, I consider him to be an aggressive alpha, whereas the previous one was not as aggressive. He was very vocal, but, you know, in terms of attacks and that sort of thing, he had a different, you might call it a dominant style. And so it maybe wasn't as surprising to see how they treated Fuduko's dead body as well, because what I saw was a lot of fear. And we had video clips that are posted online along with that paper that just came out. And if you watch closely, and if you know something about primate behavior, and maybe even if you've not watched chimps for any length of time, you can probably detect that they're quite fearful, and as well as being aggressive. And so the reaction of the chimps to Fiduco was also quite, it was shocking to me. It was difficult to watch. And that was something that we included in the paper
as
well.
And those video clips are after Fiduco has been killed.
Yeah, so we actually didn't see him being killed. We heard this ruckus at night. And then the next morning when Michel, he's my head research assistant there at Fongoli, he followed the chimps from the nesting site. They beelined it toward where they found Fiduco's body, which wasn't very far from where they're nested. And then they proceeded to attack the body.
And for them to attack a dead body of a chimpanzee, I mean, that's incredibly unusual.
Yes, it's very unusual for them to attack the body of someone like that who was from their social group. So that's the big difference that you see, is that when you see lethal coalitionary aggression in chimps, it's usually between groups. And so for them to attack Fiduco like they did after he was dead was I think significant. And also, I don't, you know, their understanding of death is very different, at least from mine. And so they were quite fearful of the body, if it would jerk or something because someone pulled on it. You know, there was a fearful reaction, as if, you know, he might react as if he weren't dead.
And in some of the popular press that has covered your paper and written more about it. There are lines that come out about, you know, the overthrow of an old tyrant and, you know, these chimpanzees revolting and then destroying the body of their defeated, you know, things like that come about. And of course, as I said before, I mean, people like to anthropomorphize with chimpanzees and describe human behavior to them. But what do you take away from it?
I mean, on one level, I don't think that's necessarily a wrong interpretation. The word tyrant I had used, even though I just couldn't find a better word, but, you know, aggressive, an aggressive dominant style would be the way that we would describe him, you know, scientifically. But, you know, in terms of the chimp's reaction, again, not that they're cognizant or have in their mind, you know, this, you know, we're going to pay him back for all those years. He was a big jerk to us or what have you. You know, I think the reaction is more immediate, but you know, it's also not far off. I think that in some cases, and the way I define anthropomorphism is that when in error you ascribe human traits to other animals. But you know, we've long talked about chimpanzee politics. Franz Duval has a great book by that name, and you know, in some cases it's not off. Very far off to use some of those terms. But I wish I wouldn't have used the term tyrant. It's just at the time I couldn't think of a better word. But, you know, more aggressive dominant style doesn't have the same ring to it, I guess.
Well, obviously, watching the chimpanzees, you see a lot of life, a lot of death and everything in between. And coming up, we all have an opportunity to get a closer view of the chimpanzees you study, because a BBC series called Spy in the Wild is going to premiere on PBS on Iowa Public Television tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock. People have an opportunity to see it. And as part of that series, they came and filmed the Fongoli chimps. So in Spy in the Wild, the whole idea is that they've disguised the camera in an almost a little robotic animal and infiltrated the community. What did they do with the Fongoli chimps?
Oh, gosh. Well, they got a lot of great footage, I'll tell you that. And they had a number of different spy critters. And so they had at least one mammal. And I'll go ahead. I think there's been commercials as well, so I don't think I'm spoiling too much. But they had a spy bush baby. They had a spy tortoise. They had basically, you know, a kind of a like a dead tree that had a camera in it. They had a baobab fruit that had a camera in it. And so they did get, you know, some of these angles are amazing. And some of the footage I just saw for the first time this last week, they gave me a sneak preview. And the Fongoli chimps are in each of the episodes. I believe there's four or five, and the Fongoli chimps are in each episode. And so, yeah, they got some remarkable footage from angles that, you know, of course, we would never have as an observer because
right,
I have
you can't get that close.
Right, exactly. And so, yeah, it was remarkable. And, you know, I think if you've seen any of the Fongoli documentaries, you see these males in the pool at Fongoli, but the angles they got were amazing because of these spy cams. So I think they got some really great footage, and some of the footage that I hadn't seen, they got of the hunting behavior, which was just wonderful. So I was really glad to see that.
They have a spy bush baby, which is one of the creatures that the Fongoli chimps hunt. They didn't eat the spy bush baby, did they?
I have to say, and I hope the John Downer and Matt Gordon wouldn't be unhappy with me, but the chimps were not fooled by the spy bush baby.
Were they? There was also that spy tortoise. Did they? They were very intrigued by it, but they didn't think it was a tortoise, right?
Well, you know, I was thinking about this actually, and the spy tortoise may have been you know, fooled more so by the spy tortoise than the bush baby. But I think in part it's because of how they react to mammals versus reptiles. And actually we're working on a paper on the subject of how they react to snakes specifically. But even tortoises, so you have these spurred or spur-thighed tortoises at Fongoli, and they're quite wary of those tortoises, fearful as well. And so their reaction to the tortoise was more along the lines of how they do treat reptiles, at least big reptiles, when they run across them.
So what do you get to see? I mean, the imagery, I know it's going to be exciting and up close, but what do you get to see because of these spy cameras?
Well, I mean, something that really struck me, really, like I said, was, you know, the view that you get from the chimps that are in the waterhole. You just never get that view. And I'll go ahead, spoiler alert. One of the chimps knocked the spy cam into the water, and so fortunately it floated, and so they have this footage from a floating baobab cam, which I think is just remarkable. And one of the most intriguing clips, I think, is of adolescent male Lex, and he finds a baby genet, which looks like a cat. It's not a cat, but it looks like a little cat. And he carries that with him for much of the day. And that to me was really remarkable. And I know I've already, you know, seen comments, you know, on social media, et cetera, that it does disturb cat people. But he was remarkably gentle with that little
genet. So almost
genet.
Like he was adopting a pet.
It really was. And they do find these little animals. It's rare, but they do find animals like this every once in a while. And I've never seen anyone treat it like Lex did. And so... Where, you know, it maybe is not the way that I would hold a cat, or that, you know, an adult would hold a cat. It kind of reminds you of maybe how a kid might handle a kitten that doesn't know how to carry them. But he was incredibly gentle. He would even pet the genet. So to me, that was really remarkable. But yeah, I think there's so many shots they got that just were amazing, because the chimps are walking past the camera. And I do have to say that Cy, who is now an adolescent male, named after the Iowa State mascot, of course.
And known for being a bit of a troublemaker.
He is. Cy is a troublemaker. I mean, he lives up to his cyclone name. And he did carry the spy tortoise around. So, and he actually scared others with the spy tortoise, because, you know, no one else wanted to touch the spy tortoise, really. And so he carried it up the tree. So you get views like that, you know, what it looks like to be a chimp in a tree, which I, of course, had never seen. When I climb a tree, it takes me, you know, 15 minutes just to get up. You know, not very far. So anyway, you got some really interesting views.
You couldn't rally climb carrying a tortoise.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Oh, that's going to be so much fun. So 5 different episodes beginning tomorrow night at 7 p.m. Jill Preetz, thank you so much for talking with me again.
Well, thank you again, Charity.
Jill Preetz is a primatologist and professor of anthropology at Iowa State University. For the last 16 years, she's been studying the lives of savanna chimpanzees in Senegal. And we're all going to get a chance to see those chimpanzees on the series Spy in the Wild, premiering tomorrow evening at 7 on Iowa Public Television. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.